Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Pure Family Multifamily REIT third quarter results conference call. Note that at this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode, but following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. And if at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. Note that this call is being recorded on November 16, 2017. And I would like to turn the conference over to Pure Multifamily Director of Investor Relations, Andrew Greig. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Andrew Greig, Director of Investor Relations for Pure Multifamily REIT LP, and I would like to welcome you all to our discussion of our 2017 Q3 financial results. We will be keeping our opening remarks on this call brief, trusting that you've had a chance to review our consolidated financial statements and related MD&A dated November 15, 2017, for the 3 and 9 months ended September 30, 2017. If not, the documents are available on our website at www.puremultifamily.com under the Investor Info section or on SEDAR. With me today on the call are CEO Steve Evans, CFO Scott Shillington, and our Vice President Samantha Adams. Following our formal remarks, we will conduct a Q&A session, and instructions will be provided at that time for you. Before we get underway, I would like to make a safe harbor statement. The following discussion will include forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to be materially different from future results expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. These statements reflect current expectations of management regarding future events and operating performance, and Pure Multifamily assumes no obligation to update or revise them to reflect new events or circumstances except as required by law. For a further description of the forward-looking statements, including risk factors related to our company and our business that could cause actual results to differ materially from the results discussed in the forward-looking statements, please refer to our MD&A dated November 15, 2017, which is available on SEDAR or our website at www.puremultifamily.com. I would now like to pass the discussion on to our CEO, Steve Evans.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks everyone for joining us today. Q3 2017 proved to be a very active quarter as we continued our property management internalization and looked to complete high-quality acquisitions using the net proceeds from our two $92 million Canadian equity offerings, which were completed during Q2. As you may recall, we announced our intention to internalize property management in May of this year. As a result, we incurred initial setup costs while we established a new property management platform with offices located in Plano, Texas, and we built out the software systems commensurate for that. We also experienced a duplication of costs while transitioning from third-party property management during this period. These costs were largely anticipated, but caused some noise in our quarterly results. During Q3, we commenced our new property management internalization software conversion and have transitioned all of our properties to the internalized platform. In addition, we ceased paying property management fees to our third-party property management group on September 30, 2017. We anticipate our vertically integrated property management platform will be able to generate market, operational, and financial data in real time and improve some of our leasing processes, as well as achieve cost savings over the coming quarters. On the acquisition front, during Q3, we secured a U.S. $23 million new first mortgage financing on Pinnacle at Union Hills, a 264-unit Class A property located in North Phoenix. The new first mortgage financing bears a fixed interest rate of 3.32% for a term of 7 years. On July 11th, we acquired the U.S. $48.8 million 306-unit Class A multifamily apartment community known as Pure at La Valeta, located in the prestigious Las Colinas submarket of Dallas. We funded the purchase of Pure at La Valeta with cash on hand and new first mortgage financing in the amount of $24.4 million, bearing a fixed interest rate of 3.81% for a term of 15 years. Subsequent to the quarter, on October 2nd, we acquired Pure Farmers Market, a 340-unit core multifamily apartment community located in Dallas, for a purchase price of $66,350,000. The property is located adjacent to the newly transformed Dallas Farmers Market, a 26,000-square-foot open-air farmers market pavilion offering local seasonal produce, naturally raised meats, eggs, cheeses, and other goods from local food artisans. Pure Farmers Market is an exciting live, work, and play asset in a core setting just minutes away from the Dallas Central Business District, the largest employment center in North Texas, and also closely located within walking distance of Deep Ellum Entertainment District, which features over 100 popular restaurants, bars, and entertainment venues. We funded the purchase of Farmers Market with the proceeds from the equity offering, which closed on June 30, 2017, and new first mortgage financing in the amount of $33.5 million, bearing a fixed interest rate of 3.67% for a 12-year term. And on October 23rd, we announced an agreement to acquire a multifamily apartment community located in Phoenix for a purchase price of $59 million. The Phoenix acquisition is subject to satisfaction of customary conditions precedent and is expected to close in late November 2017. We intend to fund a portion of the purchase price with cash on hand and new debt financing on terms to be determined. Tropical Storm Harvey. In the last week of August, the devastating Tropical Storm Harvey caused chaos and massive destruction by dumping over 50 inches of rain over 4 days in and around the city of Houston and other regions of South Texas. Fortunately, Pure Multifamily's two Houston properties escaped with very minimal damage related to Harvey, which incurred approximately $61,500 of damage in total by the end of the quarter, which did not require us filing an insurance claim. We would like to thank our Pure Multifamily team in Dallas and especially our team on the ground in Houston for all of their efforts during this time. Our property managers really did go above and beyond the call of duty to look after our residents and employees, some of whom lost their homes. It was a very unfortunate situation for families in Houston, and our thoughts are with all of them impacted in these communities as they embark on the rebuilding of their homes. In terms of deleveraging, the debt to gross book value ratio across our portfolio was 50.8% in Q3. We have made a conscious effort to incrementally over-equitize new acquisitions and decrease our leverage ratios as we grow. Although deleveraging our balance sheet creates a negative impact on payout ratios in the near term, we believe it is the right thing to do in terms of building our building the Pure Multifamily platform for long-term success. I would now like to pass things over to Scott Shillington, our CFO.
Thanks, Steve. Before going through the financial highlights for the quarter, I'd like to note that all amounts stated on this call reflect Pure Multi's interest as disclosed in the MD&A. We feel Pure Multi's interest provides the most useful information to the unitholders when looking at our financial results. Within the MD&A, we have provided a reconciliation which reflects these adjustments. At September 30th, 2017, Pure Multifamily's portfolio consisted of 20 investment properties, with an average year of construction being 2006, comprising 6,515 residential units, with an average unit size of 914 square feet, and was situated on approximately 340 acres of land. The investment properties were valued at over $1 billion and had a weighted average IFRS capitalization rate of 5.18%. Pure Multifamily's net rental income continued to increase as the 3 months ended September 30, 2017, totaled $12.4 million, compared to $10.7 million in the comparative period, representing an increase of 15.5%. The net rental income for the 9 months ended September 30, 2017, totaled $34.8 million, compared to $31.4 million in the comparative period, which represented an increase of 10.7%. Pure Multifamily's operating margins decreased for the 3 months ended September 30, 2017, as it fell to 51% compared to 53.9% in the comparative period, and for the 9 months ended, the operating margin was 52% compared to 55.8% in the comparative period. The primary factors for the decrease in operating margins was mostly due to an accounting increase in property tax expense and the continued stabilization of certain properties. General and administrative expenses for the 3 months ended September 30, 2017 was 6.8% against total revenues compared to 1.6% in the prior year and 5.5% for the 9 months ended compared to 1.5% in the prior year. The reason for this increase was primarily driven by the internalization of the asset management and property management functions. Included in G&A expense for the 3 and 9 months ended September 30, 2017 were non-recurring expenditures resulting from the internalization of the property management function of $490,000 and $702,000, respectively. Removing these non-recurring expenditures results in an adjusted G&A expense as a percentage of revenue for the 3 and 9 months ended September 30, 2017, of 4.8% and 4.5%, respectively. It is important to remember, now that we have fully internalized our property management function, as of October 1, 2017, Pure Multifamily no longer incurs any third-party property management fees on its portfolio. We anticipate the internal costs of our property management function to be approximately 2.5% of revenues on the current portfolio, a savings from the historical 3%, which is paid to the third party. The presentation of these costs will be shifted from property NOI expense to G&A expense. However, the resulted savings will benefit all unitholders through increased FFO and AFFO. At September 30th, 2017, Pure Multifamily had a debt-to-gross book value ratio of 50.8%, and the mortgages had an average interest rate of 3.72% with an average term remaining to maturity of 9 years. The FFO payout ratio for the third quarter of 2017 was 150.7% or 6.2 cents per basic unit compared to 121.1% or 8 cents per basic unit in the prior year period. The FFO payout ratio for the 9 months ended September 30th, 2017 was 130.3% or 22 cents per basic unit compared to 96.1% or 29.6 cents per basic unit in the prior year. Regarding AFFO, we feel we have been one of the most conservative companies in the multifamily REIT space with our deferred maintenance calculation, as over the last 3 fiscal years, our deferred maintenance provision represented a percent of total capital expenditures of 55% in 2014, 44% in 2015, and 39% in 2016, all of which were significantly well above the multifamily REIT average during those periods. For the third quarter of this year and for the year to date, our deferred maintenance provision represented 38% of total capital expenditures, which we believe is a fair and accurate measure of true deferred maintenance costs on a portfolio that is only slightly older than 10 years of age. The AFFO payout ratio for the third quarter of 2017 was 163.3% or 5.7 cents per basic unit compared to 130.4% or 7.4 cents per basic unit in the prior year period. The AFFO payout ratio for the 9 months ended September 30th, 2017 was 140.3% or 20.4 cents per basic unit compared to 102% or 27.8 cents per basic unit in the prior year. The primary reasons for the increased FFO and AFFO payout ratios were due to the cash on the balance sheet resulting from the equity offering issued near the end of the second quarter and the deployment of this cash into new acquisitions, the additional G&A expense incurred due to the internalization of the asset and property management functions, the increase in property tax expense, the continued stabilization of certain assets, and the overall deleveraging of Pure Multifamily's balance sheet. Looking at the third quarter specifically, when removing the impact from the non-recurring property management expenses, the duplication of property management fees, which are combined with our own internal regular recurring costs of our team down south, and the June 30th equity offering from the FFO calculation, the FFO per unit was equal to 8.7 cents or 107.8%, representing an impact of approximately 2.5 cents per unit during the third quarter. Our internal run rate FFO payout ratio is approximately 90%, which removes the impact resulting from the continued stabilization of certain investment properties and the fluctuating quarter-over-quarter property tax expenses. To provide an update on property taxes, at the end of the third quarter, we had 5 tax appeals outstanding relating to the prior year. We have made substantial headway in getting these resolved, and we believe there's a high probability of such appeals being resolved before the end of 2017. For the 2017 property taxes, we are working diligently on finalizing the current year property tax assessments and anticipate a much lower number of outstanding appeals, if any, by the end of this year. Our management's estimated NAV at the end of the third quarter is $6.89 US, or $8.72 using a 79 cent exchange rate. I'll now turn things over to Samantha, who will comment on the operations for the quarter.
Thanks, Scott. I would also like to take a moment to highlight the hard work and dedication of our teams on the ground and in Texas and in Houston in particular. Although Harvey had a devastating impact on many lives and communities, we were extremely fortunate to suffer no major damage to either of our properties, and we are almost finished the last remaining repair work. This quarter has also presented some exciting challenges for our team. In particular, we launched our property management software platform, which has been designed to create a vertically integrated and efficient management and reporting structure. We started the process in mid-July, and our accounting and day-to-day property management software applications were fully internalized by September 1st. The balance of the enhanced software applications, which will complete the integration, will be fully rolled out by the end of this year. From a day-to-day operations perspective, our focus this past quarter was on occupancy. Our overall occupancy across the portfolio has improved to 97.1% leased, compared to a leased occupancy rate of 96.5% at the end of the second quarter. Our physical occupancy for the quarter was 95%, whereas our physical occupancy across the portfolio at the end of Q2 was 93.7%. This increase in occupancy will lead to financial benefits, but there are costs associated with increasing the occupancy in markets that have new supply or other challenges, and these are typically higher concessions and marketing and leasing costs. We believe that these increased costs are shorter term in nature as we counter the new supply that has come online in our various markets. This quarter, we also introduced an additional method of reporting our quarter-over-quarter same property operating metrics, which keeps us more in line with our peers and are reflected on this call. The MD&A has the full description of our same property results, including results that are presented in the same manner as prior quarters for comparative purposes. To that end, our Dallas portfolio is performing well. This is further supported by our same property revenue growth for Dallas, which was 3.2% Q3 over Q3. The NOI for Dallas was flat quarter over quarter as a few of our properties experienced higher marketing costs and concessions as we worked to increase the occupancy and address the new supply challenges. However, despite the new supply, our same property average rent increased 4.9% year to date and 3.9% for the quarter. In Houston, our properties are essentially fully occupied. Prior to Harvey, at the end of Q2, our occupancy at our two Houston properties was approximately 92.8% physical and 94.7% leased. And subsequent to Harvey, at the end of the current quarter, physical occupancy increased to approximately 99.1% and leased occupancy increased to 99.6%. Today, we are on average experiencing leased occupancy of 99% and physical occupancy of about 98%. And although the revenues decreased 1.1% quarter over quarter due to occupancy challenges in Houston prior to Harvey, our properties did deliver 3.4% year-to-date same property average rent growth, or 2.7% for the quarter. With respect to San Antonio, I'm going to speak to the same property numbers as well as PureView and Pure Estates. On a same property basis, our physical occupancy increased by 2.9% Q3 over Q3, and although the revenues were slightly down for the quarter, they are up 1.9% the year to date. The same property average rent also increased 1.9% year to date and 2% Q3 over Q3. The NOI also improved quarter over quarter, increasing by 1.8%. As discussed on a prior call, our goal for PureView and Pure Estates was to normalize the occupancy. During the second quarter, Estates was 93.8% leased and 89.8% physically occupied, and PureView was 90.5% leased and 86.6% physically occupied. During the third quarter, the occupancy trended up with Estates increasing to 97.6% leased and 93.9% physically occupied, and PureView increasing to 98.3% leased and 96.3% respectively. There is a short-term cost to leasing up properties, and in particular, as stated, concessions play a role, and our marketing and leasing expenses increased, impacting our revenues and NOI. The Phoenix economy continues to strengthen, and our Phoenix properties delivered 6.7% NOI growth quarter over quarter. The physical occupancy remained fairly constant at 96.3% versus 96.5% quarter over quarter, resulting in same property average rent increases of 5.3% year to date and 4.6% for the quarter, generating revenue growth of 4.7% quarter over quarter. On a portfolio-wide basis, we increased our weighted average rental rate to $1,249 per occupied unit, or $1.37 per square foot for the third quarter of 2017, compared to $1,224 average rental rate per occupied unit, or $1.32 per square foot for the same quarter of 2016. On a percentage basis, our same property average rent increases were 4.2% year-to-date and 3.4% for Q3. I will now turn things back over to Steve to wrap up.
Thanks, Samantha. In summary, Pure Multifamily continues to execute our strategy of building a high-quality Class A apartment portfolio in the strongest job growth and population growth markets of the U.S. Sun Belt. And despite some short-term vacancy issues, these markets continue to generate solid rental rate growth, as illustrated in the 4.2% growth in same property rent per occupied unit year-to-date, as Samantha just referenced. In terms of our acquisition strategy, in addition to Pure Farmers Market, several of our recent acquisitions have been core product, rather than the suburban properties that we have acquired over the past few years. This is not a shift in strategy, but is driven by our opportunistic mandate for our growth, for our strong growth markets. That is to say, we always look to place our capital in the best available asset acquisitions. In Dallas, for example, in past years, the vast majority of new apartment supply was being delivered in the core markets, which tended to mute the rent growth in those markets as they contended with absorbing these new units. Recently, that balance has shifted to be roughly 50-50 between core and suburban markets, thus it has opened up more assets for our consideration. The pipeline of new and nearly new Class A properties in our target markets is very strong. And pending the completion of property due diligence, we expect to be able to announce the closing of the Fillmore acquisition in Phoenix in the coming weeks. We have looked at more acquisitions in Phoenix during 2017 to diversify our revenue streams, moderate our property tax expense, and expand our Phoenix portfolio as we focus on the strongest and most dynamic economies in the U.S. Sun Belt. With the successful in-house transition of all Pure Multifamily's investment properties from third-party property management, we have completed the internalization of property management well ahead of our previously stated goal of the end of 2017. We believe that an internally managed, vertically integrated property management platform will enable Pure Multifamily to build our brand and presence in our target markets while enhancing operational efficiencies across our platform. In addition, we believe that the cost savings from the internalization will become evident in the coming quarters. As for our balance sheet, we continue our conservative balance sheet management, which has seen us steadily reduce our mortgage loan-to-value metric. Additionally, Pure Multifamily has 100% fixed mortgage rates, and we do not have any mortgages maturing until 2019, with an average term remaining of 9 years until maturity. In fact, 50.7% of our mortgages are scheduled to mature after 2026. So in summary, with our top quality apartment portfolio, strong U.S. Sunbelt growth markets, and the additional efficiencies that our internalized property management platform will provide, we are very excited about the growth potential for Pure Multifamily unit holders. The economic drivers and apartment fundamentals in our markets remain strong, and we believe the strong demand for U.S. pure play investments in the Canadian public markets will allow Pure Multi to continue to grow our portfolio in the future. We are preparing a move to the TSX main board, which we anticipate will happen in early 2018, and we believe this move will enhance our visibility and liquidity for our unit holders. So on behalf of the management team at Pure Multifamily REIT, I'd like to thank our employees and directors for their hard work and loyalty, and of course, our unit holders for their continued support. And with that, I'd like to open up the lines for any questions that anybody may have.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have any questions at this time, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. Note that questions will be taken in the order received. And should you wish to withdraw your request, you will need to press star followed by two. And we ask that if you're using a speakerphone, to please lift the handset before pressing any keys. And your first question would be from Frédéric Blondeau at Echelon Wealth Partners. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
Hey, Fred.
Maybe three quick questions. First, Scott, you mentioned that your run rate, did you say FFO or AFFO payout was 90%?
Yeah, FFO.
So AFFO would be about 95%.
95, okay. And I guess you're comfortable at these levels, right?
Yeah, so that's, as I mentioned, that's once we get through these kind of non-recurring, get rid of the dilution impacts and the I guess now the property management fees, that will be gone for Q4. It's also getting our properties up to a more stable level. So once we get, as we're getting there and burn through those concessions, so not too far out. That is our run rate.
Okay, great. And on this subject, what should we expect in terms of additional G&A expenses from the internalization in Q4 and maybe in H1 next year?
Yeah, I think what we were, hang on, let me go back. I think we were about 4.8% for the quarter, getting rid of those non-recurring type costs.
Okay.
I think, as we say, we'll be between, I think, 5 and 5.5 going forward is a good estimate to use. Included in there, though, is the property management fees that we say, the old property management fees, which we say we can run at about 2.5%. So if you back those off, then you're down to a 3.5 to 4 kind of corporate-wide non-property management related costs.
Okay, great. And lastly, maybe for Samantha, when I look at the demand side, I mean, I'm just like you. I feel like it's, the negative impact of the new supply, could be short-term in nature. But what would be your definition of short-term? Like, do you think we should expect meaningful improvements next year? And what should we expect in terms of same-store NOI growth next year?
In terms of the supply and the demand, when I speak of sort of shorter term in nature, it's sort of over, I would look at it over sort of 2-3 quarters. And I think that what we've seen is as our occupancy has moved back across the entire portfolio, obviously there are still a few properties that are lagging a little bit, but moved back into the levels where I become more comfortable. I think we're starting to see what I'm hoping is the tail end of the sort of negative drag on our occupancy. And going forward, the message out to my team in Dallas is, the concessions need to start disappearing. And that's the focus now going forward.
Okay. And what should we expect in terms of same-store NOI growth for next year? What do you have in mind?
Well, at this point, we're still plotting through sort of the next year, and so I don't really have any numbers that I can give you at this point.
Okay, that's fair. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Next question will be from Brad Sturges at Industrial Alliance Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Continuing on Fred's question there about same property NOI, but maybe get a little bit more specific about occupancy. You've seen, obviously, the improvement in Q3 and noted Houston, for example, is seeing further improvements into Q4. Are you seeing further improvements across the rest of the portfolio? And how does that look, I guess, in some of the other markets right now?
We're seeing stabilized numbers in San Antonio, or normal numbers, I guess, is probably a better way of putting it now, sort of normalized occupancy in San Antonio. Which is great for the San Antonio portfolio. Houston, the occupancy, as I stated, is looking very, very strong. The occupancy is starting to improve across the Dallas portfolio. There are a few properties that were never really impacted by new supply, and some of the ones that were are certainly improving in terms of overall occupancy. So I'm feeling more and more comfortable with Dallas as a whole. And Phoenix has actually never been an issue. The occupancy there has been quite constant over the last couple of years. So I think we're coming out of the occupancy challenges that have impacted us the last couple of quarters.
And with Pureview and Pure Estates, now that we're basically at U.S. Thanksgiving next week, are you fairly comfortable that you have reached stabilization with those two assets now from an occupancy perspective?
Yes.
Okay. In terms of the rent concessions, particularly in Dallas, is it more specific to a submarket, or is it more the non-stabilized assets that you're seeing more concessions happen to be given, or just a little bit further color on that?
It really is being driven by new supply. So whether the assets are in stabilization mode or even some of our older assets, we have one asset, an older asset, for example, in the Plano submarket, which has traditionally been one of our strongest performers in terms of NOI growth and occupancy. that has been impacted from an occupancy perspective with the new supply that's come on. As we move into 2018, we think the impact of that new supply is going to be will continue to decrease the new supply gets absorbed.
And what's your expectations for that concessions to kind of run off at this stage? What would be the timeline?
You know, each property is a little bit unique, and the submarkets are all very unique. The instructions are the same across the board that I would just like to see them being phased out sort of as we speak. And if the managers can do it and if, you know, the regional team feels comfortable, that's what they're going to do. So we look at it on a unit-by-unit basis as well as a property-by-property basis.
Got it. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Next question will be from Mario Saric at Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Sticking to the concession theme, I know, Samantha, historically you've been loath to offer concessions. It looks like they're specific to a couple of assets in each of the markets, but what do you think changed over the past 3 to 6 months? Was supply growth maybe a bit more formidable than you anticipated? From a trend perspective, what kind of changed this?
You know, the decision we made, to be honest, it's not that the supply necessarily changed or the growth sort of was larger than anticipated in terms of the new supply, but the decision we made was, you know, if you taking the short-term hit in terms of concessions to get your occupancy up to the point where you don't need to offer concessions, or if you do need to offer something, it's a lot lower than it would have been if you have a lot of units that are available. It also becomes sort of a confidence issue for the leasing staff and the on-site staff as well. So it was sort of a specific decision we took from on the operations side to not sit on vacant units for longer than absolutely necessary. And I am loath to offer concessions. I don't like it. But in order to improve the occupancy, especially, for example, at a property like a Pure View and Pure Estates, it was important that we get those occupancies up to stabilized levels.
Okay, and then like in terms of the packages, were they generally offered to kind of incoming tenants on the vacant suites, or how should we think about the concessions offered on vacant suites versus, let's say, suites that were turning over or even renewal tenants?
Sorry, I missed it. Sorry, Mary, you cut out a bit there, the beginning part of your question.
Oh, okay. So I'm just trying to understand kind of the breadth of the concession packages in the individual assets that they were offered in, whether it was specifically just for the vacant suites or if tenants that were on turnover received them or renewal, what was the strategy taken?
The overwhelming majority are new tenants, new leases.
Now, I don't think you disclose it, but you show the same property occupied rent was up about 2.1%. How would that, for the entire portfolio, how would that break down between turnover and renewal, roughly?
Oh, I'd have to get that for you.
Okay. And then just maybe lastly on the concessions, so your occupancy went up nicely quarter over quarter. How should we think about the revenue impact with that increase in occupancy? You mentioned kind of Houston happened towards the end of the quarter, so we should see the revenue impact in Q4 and onwards. But for the other markets, maybe Dallas in particular, have we seen the revenue impact in the Q3 numbers, or should we expect to see the revenue bump in Q4?
There were certainly some positive signs in Q3, but I think the larger impact will be in Q4.
Okay. And then just maybe my last question, just on supply in Dallas. Kind of some of your peers have hinted at that supply absorption may be pushed back to the second half of 18 versus the first half of 18, and now they may be referring more to the uptown market as opposed to your markets. But how are you feeling about that supply situation in 2018?
Yeah, I would say that I think that's accurate. It's a little bit fuzzy. The original projections we saw, there would be a greater number coming on in 2017 and trending down somewhat more in 2018. It's not an exact science because construction delays happen and the lease-up doesn't begin as scheduled. And so more recent data we saw sort of almost equally divided the supply between the 2 years, which suggests that there will be a kind of a continuing increased supply into 2018 for a period. I think that's a good way to look at it. And I know there's a, you know, the uptown market certainly is oversupplied, but there's various regions that are impacted by it.
And I think the last quarter you kind of mentioned long-term target rent growth in Dallas of 3%, maybe a little bit more in the near term. Is that still a fair observation?
Yeah, I think it's fair. We hope to beat that, but I think that's a fair assessment, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thanks, Mario.
Thank you. Next question will be from Jenny Ma at Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey,
I don't want to extend the concessions discussion by too much more, but I do have one question about how you're dealing with the term of lease when you're doing the concessions. I'm just trying to figure out how long you're amortizing it for. Are you kind of playing around with the leases to make them shorter in hopes that it'll normalize, say, over 6 months as opposed to 12, or you're sort of taking out more insurance by extending it, you know, 12, 14, 16 months and hoping to keep the tenant there and the occupancy stable?
We're remaining, most of the leases are still 12-month leases.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it sort of in the magnitude of like a 3 month's rent?
Every unit and every property is a little bit different. We've seen 6 weeks, although that would be on the far fewer than 6 weeks. Most of them are in the 2 to 4 week range.
Okay, great. And I will leave the concession discussion there. As far as property tax appeals, Scott, I know you mentioned there were 5 outstanding. Were there any that were settled in Q3?
No, we had 7 from year end last year, 2 of which were done in Q1. We expect to get the remaining 5 done in Q4 here.
Okay. And then with regards to the new acquisitions, Farmers Market and Fillmore, can you speak to the in-place occupancy rate? Is it going to, because they're 2016 builds, is it going to be a similar lease-up profile of some of the other acquisitions of new developments you've done?
Yes. Yeah, no, we do have a structure in place that we basically get a revenue guarantee to sort of help with the stabilization that's drawn down monthly. So that will help us a little bit and make it more in essence, more stabilized a little quicker. But there's going to be a continuing challenge and a huge effort by our teams at each of the properties to push through that.
Can you speak to how long the rent guarantee is for or how much?
Generally, they last between 6 months to a year.
Okay, and it assumes, like, say, a 90% occupancy rate?
Between 90 and 95%.
Yeah, it's a little fluid depending what happens in a given month. So it could be could be stretched out to about a year. It could be a little less if we use more of it up.
Okay. And then with regards to some of the one-time G&A expenses for the internalization, do you expect any to spill over into Q4?
Yeah, we expect a little bit into Q4. A majority of it, we had a little bit in Q2, obviously. Majority of it was Q3. I would, without getting through Q4 the way, I would estimate maybe around $100,000 in Q4, just kind of off the top of my head. So not nearly as much as I hit in Q2, though.
Okay, great. And then my last question is with regards to the 2 mortgage maturities in 2019 on, I think it's Bear Creek and Walker Commons. Is it too early to be looking at that right now?
No, we're always looking. Got to look at the current rates, have to look at like terms we want to go with, have to look at the mortgage prepayment expense penalties on those as well, kind of weighing that all together. So we're still, I think they're actually both in the fall of 2019, so we're about 2 years away on those.
Okay.
And we do continue to monitor those.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you. Next question will be from Himanshu Gupta at GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you, guys. So this is regarding the Avenue on Fairmont property in Dallas. So cap rate was reduced 50 beefs in the quarter. Just wondering what triggered this change? I mean, did you get an appraisal done? Will this be like a broad-based trend which you're seeing in terms of cap rate compression, or is it just a property-specific thing?
Yeah, so that was a property-specific. What happened was that this was our first appraisal done on this property since we bought it, mid-September last year. So basically, that is the market cap rate of the properties in the area. The NOI, obviously, with the stabilization and supply coming in there, the NOI is not what we projected when we first brought the property, just because it's taken a little bit longer to get to stabilization, as well as we mentioned, that this more additional supply kind of came into the area during the year. So it's the cap rate that we initially had was on our initial stabilized pro forma when we bought the property. And again, now that we have it appraised and it's taking longer to stabilize, it's the actual appraisal cap rate and similar cap rates in the area, where the initial cap rate, as I mentioned, was our own based on the purchase price we bought it versus our own stabilized year one NOI projections.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. And just, you know, bigger picture, I mean, the quarter, the focus was to increase occupancy and then internalize property management function. So both have been achieved to some extent. So what is the focus for the next two quarters? I mean, are you looking for some capital recycling opportunities? I know, you know, there you have a couple of old vintage assets, or where, you know, the focus of the management would be.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's really sticking to our knitting and working on continuing to push occupancies up and generate some good metrics in terms of rent growth and get the trends going in the right direction for us. In terms of the older assets, we have a couple which we would characterize as Class B assets. We have no immediate intent of divesting those because they are performing really well for us and generating great rent growth. So at this point, we don't have it on the immediate radar screen to look to divest them. It's always something we come back and revisit across our portfolio. And then another focus in the fairly short order, near term, will be migrating to the TSX, which again should hopefully have a positive impact on our trading value and liquidity.
Sure. And just to follow up on the payout, I know you mentioned around, you know, 90-95% as a comfortable level. So what leverage do you assume for that payout ratio?
Well, part of that is that's taken away the non-recurring costs, kind of taking away the dilution from the equity raises. So that's just assuming we're more stabilized level at the properties, and most are getting there, as Samantha mentioned. There's a few still lingering out there and some a few concessions to burn through. But the other, that's also considering we're kind of in the low 50s for leverage. That's another reason why the payout ratio, I guess, on a run rate has gone up over some prior years, because we are buying lower cap properties to high-grade our portfolio, as well as decreasing the leverage, as Steve mentioned. It hurts our payout ratio short-term, but it's kind of, especially in a rising interest rate environment, more beneficial to the REIT on a long-term basis.
Sure. Thank you. I'll turn it back.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question will be from Michael Smith at RBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon.
Michael.
Just wondering if you could comment on the, you know, on, I guess, Houston, there's a big rebuild going on in that city. I presume it's taken up a lot of labor trades. What are your thoughts on that? Is it going to slow down supply, or is there still enough trades out there to for everything just to continue at normal in San Antonio, Dallas, et cetera?
Yeah, definitely going to put some pressure on any rebuilding that's going on, because it's going to tax the construction trades to some degree. But it was already supply was already slowing down significantly in Houston because they came off of quite an overbuild. So there's clearly a need for some replacement. But yeah, it's probably going to make it tougher for developers to replace, rebuild, repair, et cetera, which you feel bad benefiting from that, but that'll probably be a positive for us operationally in our existing assets. So that's Houston specific. On a broader basis, I mean, the whole region's growing pretty strong. So, you know, that probably leads to the earlier comment that I made about the supply in Dallas specific dragging into 2018 a little bit more than the bulk of it hitting in 2017 is probably a derivative of some of that tight supply on the labor front.
Okay, thank you. And just switching gears, Samantha, I'm just wondering, now that you've got internalized property asset and property management, How are your systems relative, you know, for marketing relative to the old systems?
How are they relative to the old systems?
Yeah, like would you say they're the same, better, more information, more dynamic, or is it an improvement, or is it about the same?
All of the dramatic improvement across the board.
Yeah. And can you give just a couple of big examples, I guess, or most obvious examples?
Well, I mean, the biggest benefit to us is having everything internalized for one, and we now have one system. With sort of different modules that guides and all areas of our operations from finance right the way through to analytical tools. So it's a vertically integrated system, it truly is a vertically integrated system. And our data now, our information is live. It's all cloud-based, so it's online access for all of us. So it doesn't matter where we are anymore. It's a huge plus moving from a third-party property manager to in-house.
I might add also, it empowers the property managers with more involvement, which they see real time what's going on with their property more clearly than they did with the old system. And on a utilities and bill payables basis, it's just far more efficient than the old school method that the third party property manager we use.
Yep.
You know, did a fine job on the big picture, but this just frees up time, which I think will lead to greater focus on enhancing the management experience for all the residents of the properties.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question will be from Matt Kornack at National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Just a few questions for Scott. With regards to how you account for the concessions, do you amortize those over the lease, or is it taken as a hit up front in your NOI number?
No. Yeah, because they're I guess, a non-material amount as a whole, they're taken as a hit up front right now.
Okay.
If so it gets to be a larger number, yeah, we'd amortize it over, yeah.
But so you're not recognizing then the occupancy gains if they took place as a result of concessions at the end of the quarter?
Yeah, no, so occupancy is there. So as an example, I guess, you'll see if you held the rent, if no one turned over, you'd see a lot increased rent in the future quarters if there was no turnover at the property. Yeah.
And then with regards to the property management third-party fee that's being paid, is all of that still the 2.5% of revenue that you mentioned? Is that on the entire existing portfolio in your Q3 number? Is there a portion that's third party and a portion that would have been internal as of Q3? I'm just trying to think of how much cost you have to shift from.
All of that shown on the NOI expense or property manager fees, that's all third party. All of our stuff, all of our internal property management costs is actually put into G&A expense. So Q4 and going forward, property management fees will show zero. So our NOI will actually get a boost from that, but our G&A expense is going up. And in the quarter, internally we had about roughly $400,000 of recurring type costs of our property management. Now it's going to step up to about, like, say 2.5 or just under 2.5 expense of revenues going forward. We didn't have it for the full quarter at all, but most of it was in there. So that's what you'll see it in the future. You'll see it, additional G&A expense by, let's say, 2.5% of revenue from prior years, most of it was in this quarter, but not all of it, as well as the reduction of the 3% of revenues in the NOI side. So you'll see that 50 basis point gain on the FFO, AFFO.
Okay. So needless to say, there's double counting of the
two
platforms in this quarter.
Exactly. So when I got my 6.2 cents FFO per unit, up to 8.7 cents. I removed the non-recurring costs, the double counting of the management fees, as well as the dilution from the June 30th raise. As none of that June 30th raise was put to use, the first part of it was put to use with the Farmers Market acquisition, and the rest of it we put to use with the Phoenix acquisition.
Okay, so that's on acquisitions announced today, and this may be as for Steve or Sam, but you still have some liquidity to acquire additional assets with the existing cash on the balance sheet, or do you think you'll keep leverage in and around the same levels at this point?
Yeah, our intent is to keep leverage in around the same levels, Matt. So we don't have a lot of liquidity to buy another asset subsequent to the closing of the Phoenix asset.
Okay. So from a modeling standpoint, X any equity, we should hold it at that acquisition and nothing beyond it. Okay, fair enough.
Yep.
And then last for Scott, in terms of property taxes in Q4, at this point you don't have any sense as to what the quantum would be on that? Have you heard back from any of them yet or still?
Yeah, no, as I mentioned, we've got, there's only around five or so remaining of our 21 properties we currently have left to sell for 2017. So it's already, we had 7 out of 17 last year at year end, so it's already lower. We hope to get a few more of those settled by year end as well. I would assume on a run rate basis, maybe something closer to, I think we're 19.9% of revenues for Q3. We made a lot of adjustments in Q3 because we actually had some of those numbers finalized, which is why it shows a reduction. This year, different from last year, we actually over-accrued at the start of the year, just like we had in all the prior years. Last year was the only year that we had under-accrued and had that Q4 hit, partly because of all the outstanding appeals. So this year, we actually were more conservative and we had a reduction number. So Q4, I'd keep it similar to Q3, then high 19s, maybe 20%, and then with a slight reduction for any of the appeals that we expect to get from prior year coming into Q4.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's it for me.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Next question will be from Dean Wilkinson at CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Afternoon, everybody.
Hey, Dean.
Pretty much anything that I was going to ask has been asked. Which I guess is a good thing. On Dallas-Fort Worth and the new supply coming into the market, though, Steve, I think I'm looking at the same numbers you are and a projection for 2018 to look similar to 2017. Do you have a sense as to where those 2018 deliveries look like they're coming? Is it more sort of a 50-50, as you alluded to, or is it coming back a little more into the core or maybe a little more less in the core?
I think it's roughly 50-50. I don't have it right at my fingertips. We can delve into that more and give you a little bit more color offline. But it's on a broad brush sort of overview. It's in the last year and a half, 2 years, it's shifted, roughly 50-50 between the core markets and some of the hotter suburban markets. And by that I mean now out in the area near Amalfi, where a lot of the new jobs and dynamic growth is going on, tends to attract a little bit more of the supply.
But that's not there's no problem with absorption, I'm assuming, up in those markets, like supply.
No, there isn't, but it still has that sort of effect in terms of impacting, if everybody else is offering concessions during their lease up, it impacts even, any of the assets like Samantha alluded to, the Preserve, which is up in that area, very historically stable asset, but you become impacted by it if there's stuff in your immediate area that's offering specials and concessions. You have to recognize it, otherwise you just suffer on the occupancy side.
You get pushed on the other side, yeah. And that sort of 21 to 22,000 units that are coming, how does that compare to, say the last 3 or 4 years? I know that 2016 was a little bit lower at around 15, but I can't recall what they were before that.
Yeah, I don't have all the numbers at my fingertips, but they were in the mid to sort of trending upper teens, which is within Dallas, and generally considered in the marketplace, there's sort of a rule of thumb is for 5 new jobs, you need 1 new apartment. And when that delivery sort of matches that ratio, occupancy tends to stay in equilibrium. And so, historically, Dallas has been delivering in the 100,000 job range, and that's been pretty consistent over the last several years, and they were sort of under-delivering, so you would have had a lesser than 5-to, or a greater than 5-to-1 structure ratio there. This year, we're just a hair under, and projected next year, just a hair under 5-to-1, based on the data points that I've been reviewing recently, and so it just suggests there'll be a little bit more concessions continuing in the marketplace, but it will be fully absorbed, and most forecasters suggest over the little longer term, we'll see a downward trend in supplies based on a little tightening in the
the finance space for construction debt.
Got it. That totally makes sense. And then I guess the one last question that I would have, which it's a real small one. The $61.5 million of expenses associated to, let's call it damage from the hurricane, that was just flat 60, out expense.
$61,500. Yeah,
$61,500. I'm thinking big numbers.
If it was $61.5 million, we definitely would have filed an insurance claim.
Yeah. Or you'd be a lot bigger. Was that just expensed in the quarter through the repairs and maintenance line?
No, that was the capitalized cost. There's obviously some minor repairs and maintenance, nothing major, but the biggest part was the CapEx, and that was capitalized.
Okay.
So there's some stuff lingering in the Q4, but not nearly as much as that. So it's
not nearly $61.5 million?
No. No.
Carry the zero, Dean. Okay, that's it for me. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Dean.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have a follow-up from Mario Sarek. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Maybe a quick question for Scott, just on IFRS and the methodology. If I look at Avenue off Fairmont, which was brought up on the call, the cap rate was down 50 beeps because you had an appraisal. The fair value was down $1.6 million quarter-over-quarter because of the NOI reduction that you refer to. I know for IFRS purposes, you generally use a stabilized occupancy level. How does that work on the rent side? So I guess the question is, if you've taken the concession hits up front from an accounting perspective, as those burn off at Avenue off Fairmont, should we expect to see that $69.5 million start to move back higher again subsequent quarters?
I think you will. I mean, generally, the in the area, because of the more supply coming into that area, just the general market rent on a stabilized basis dropped a little bit. In addition, it's a year later, so the actual stabilized property tax expenses up as well. So that kind of had an impact on the NOI overall number. So that's why the actual drop in total.
Okay. But as the occupancy kind of moves higher, you'd expect that value to come back up again.
Yeah, no, exactly. As Steve mentioned, as the supply gets absorbed, the market, the whole area for a stabilized market will actually start to move up as well, and that's when you start to see the increase again.
Okay. Great. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Mario.
Thank you. And at this time, Mr. Evans, we have no other questions registered from the phones.
Great. Thank you, operators. On behalf of Samantha, Scott, Andrew, and the entire Pure Multifamily Management team, I'd like to thank all of you for spending time with us today. Feel free to call us at any time. We're always happy to chat about our business and our portfolio. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this does indeed conclude your conference call for today. Once again, thank you for attending, and at this time, we do ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have yourselves a lovely evening.